San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, August 28, 2022. Today's lesson is Get Your Own Dirt with Reverend Dr. Constance Cook Kaur. Good morning. And welcome to the San Diego Center for Spiritual Living. Welcome home. Welcome right here, right where you are. And I'd like to anchor us in the truth that we do every Sunday. There is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. And I call this God, the Living Spirit Almighty, one, indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. This month of August, we've been talking about nature. And so the first week, we talked about Mother Nature and how things are all part of Mother Nature, and nature is all good, regardless of how we as humans want to look at it. Then the second Sunday, we talked about the water of life, and I had fun doing some research on how much water there is in our bodies, in the things that we eat, in the things that we drink, and how our entire existence here on Earth is all about avoiding dehydration, which kind of makes sense. But if you want to stay alive, you have to avoid dehydration. Last week, we talked about all creatures great and small, and I had some fun talking about everything from bacteria to Frankenstein and everything in between, reminding everyone that we humans are also creatures and that we get to choose whether we embrace the greatness of our lives or if we choose to remain small in our lives. So today our talk is entitled Get Your Own Dirt. Now, for those of you who have heard this little story that I shared a few weeks ago, months ago, whenever it was, there are a group of scientists who are trying to prove that God does not exist. So they go way, way out of their way, do lots of research, spend lots of time trying to create life. And they finally realize, we've done it. We've created life. So they make an appointment and they go visit God and they say, God, you have had the monopoly on creating life as long as we know, but we're here to tell you, we have figured it out. Science, our science that we have used to prove that we can create life and therefore prove that you are not the all-powerful, we figured it out. So God says, okay, fine, show me. So they bring out all of these different chemicals and vials and machines that can heat things and machines that can cool things. And then they bring in a bucket of dirt. And God says, hold on, get your own dirt. Because from all the stories, God created man from the earth, formed him, molded him, breathed into him. So whatever the scientists were doing it on top of God's foundation. So today we're going to be talking about science a little bit and nature and the divine source of all that is. All that is. We're going to go right down to the roots of the truth. Ernest Holmes is the founder of the religious science movement and the author of the Science of Mind textbook. And in our quotes for this morning, Ernest Holmes said, "Science is leading us surely by its process and method back again to the great spiritual deductions of the ages. The physical universe is one. Mind is one." Now, that's a very powerful statement. What he's saying, in essence, is science is proving religion. Science is proving the existence of the divine creative source. In the Science of Mind textbook, it starts out with the thing itself, how it works. Let's see, what are they actually called? The thing itself, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. And those are the first 25 to 40 pages. What the very beginning of the Science of Mind textbook says is very moving. And I'm going to share that with you. Ernest writes, "We all look forward to the day when science and religion shall walk hand in hand through the visible to the invisible. Science knows nothing of opinion, but recognizes a government of law whose principles are universal. Yet any scientist who refuses to accept tangible values has no adequate basis for the values he's already discovered. Revelation must keep faith with reason and religion with law, while intuition is ever spreading its wings for greater flights, and science must justify faith in the invisible." So when Ernest says science must justify faith in the invisible, it sounds like he's saying, well, science, you have to prove religion and God. But it's an interesting way to look at it. What he's really saying is you don't get to pick and choose the scientific principles to which you decide or you want to advocate or adhere to them. If you believe in any invisible principle, and oh, by the way, all principles are invisible, then you have to prove all of them. If you say one can be proven, you have to be able to prove all of them. And if you are not willing to do the research and attempt to prove that what you're saying is based on a universal principle, then nobody should believe anything you say because you're being self-contradicting. We have a little experience lately over the last 2 years where scientists have said one thing and science has said another. And so it's not so much that we have to believe all the scientists, but that we cannot deny true science. And this is, after all, Science of Mind is religious science. Jean Houston is a famous author, and she was a famous researcher and author. And she coincidentally wrote the foreword to the version of the Science of Mind textbook that I have right here, my leather-bound version. She talked about what Science of Mind is. Now, before I tell you that, I want to give you one Emerson quote. Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, "Everything in nature contains all the powers of nature, Everything is made of one hidden stuff. One hidden stuff. What do we think that stuff is? That stuff is the divine being. It is of the divine being. That stuff is your own divine nature. In the second and third paragraphs of the foreword by Dr. Jean Houston, she wrote, "If I were to state the essence of the teaching of the science of mind, it would be that the highest God and the innermost God is one God. The core of each human being is the, quote, original creative genius of the universe," end quote. What she means is, it's stuff. The core of each human being is divine stuff. She goes on, "We are, therefore, the lensing of God stuff on earth. The focalization of eternity in time. Consciously or unconsciously, we direct the flow of universal mind into form. In Homier terms, quote, the cosmic engine is started, but man guides it in his own life, end quote. This grants us tremendous power, and with it, the innate responsibility to make or break our world through the extraordinary working power of our minds. The practical emphasis in the science of mind of schooling the power of trained thought. So much of our ordinary thinking lapses into habitual patterns. With little variation from one day to the next, our lives mirror this and fall into serial monotony, interrupted by episodes of trouble, panic, and loss. We live then as limited, crippled versions of who and what we are, suffering the continuance of emotional plagues and toxic thoughts. In contrast, the science of mind takes seriously the dictum of being recreated through the renewing of our minds, and not just our minds, but our bodies and souls as well. The powers of second Genesis lie within us, but this means that we must agree to attune and orchestrate our thoughts and emotions toward higher purposes and creative ends. In this we have help, for Spirit assures that the lure of becoming is always calling, as is the incendiary vision of what we may be. We are limited only by concept and the refusal that comes from ignorance or laziness to remount the slope of thought." So she's telling us that science of mind is the highest God and the innermost God is one God. What does that tell us? Unity, union. There is no separation in what God is, who God is, and who I am. There isn't God and man. There is only God, because every living being is a part of God and has its being in God. We can never, ever, ever be separated from God. How could we be separated from ourselves? We can't. Even those people who have multiple personalities, they are still themselves. There is an appearance of separation that we have accepted as true and real. But what's true and real is that it's false. Also in the Science of Mind textbook, on page 36 and 37, it says, there is spirit or this invisible cause and nothing out of which all things are to be made. Now, spirit plus nothing leaves spirit only. Hence, there is one original cause and nothing out of which we are made. In other words, we are made from this thing. That is why we are called the Son of God. We are made from this stuff, this divine stuff. Ernest writes, the thing, the stuff, the thing then works for us by working through us and is us always. It cannot work for us in any other way. It spreads itself over the whole universe and shouts at us from every angle. But it can become power to us only when we recognize it as power. Only when we recognize it as power. So are you with me so far? Good. Good. So place your hand over your heart and affirm with me. Today, I acknowledge that I am of the divine being. My true nature is divine. I am that spirit which is immortal. I am that peace which is freedom. I am that health which is changeless. I am that wisdom which is perfect. I am that nature which is harmony. I am that life which is eternal. I am that law which is order. I am that activity which is equal to every demand. I am that success which is prosperity. I am that supply which is abundance. I am that love which is conscious unity. This is the truth of my divinity. And so it is. And so simply breathe. All of the universe is who you are. Another one of our quotes from this morning is from Henry Miller. The world is not to be put in order. The world is order. It is for us to put ourselves in unison with this order. What he's saying is, we don't need to try and control the uncontrollable. We don't need to try and change the changeless. Everything exists exactly as it is in perfect divine order. With the spiritual principles, with the laws, with nature, with divine, it all is in order. When we get into trouble is when we try to avoid that order. We try to ignore that order. How far are we going to get when we ignore electricity and stick a bobby pin into an outlet? We're going to learn that's not a good idea. But are we going to put together in our mind, I was trying to ignore divine order. I was trying to hide from or manipulate something that if I give it 2 seconds of thought, I would know that there is electrical power in an outlet. All we have to do is look around to see the beauty of everything. Hans Christian Andersen said, the whole world is a series of miracles, but we're so used to seeing them that we call them ordinary things. Birds flying, That's a miracle. Cats always landing on their feet. That's a miracle. I saw one of those Lighter Side of Science posts, and it says, cats always land on their feet. A slice of buttered bread always lands on the butter. So if you want to make a perpetual motion machine, you take a cat and you strap a buttered slice of bread on the back of it. And then you put it on some kind of a rod and attach it to a motor. And the cat, as long as it can't land, will continue to roll over and over. Because when the butter side would land, that would mean a cat wouldn't be on its feet. So then the next rotation, the cat would be on its feet, but the butter side is up. And so it always lands on the buttered side, so it just keeps rotating and generating energy. And I thought, boy, some of these people, the way we look at principles and what we truly believe in, some of it's pretty funny. One of the things we ought to remember is that not only is God all things, all nature, and that nature is God, but that God is love. The very essence of God is love. And when we experience love in a natural environment, we can consider that we are being nurtured by nature. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, "It is not so much for its beauty that the forest makes a claim on men's hearts, as for that subtle something, that quality of air, that emanation from old trees, that so wonderfully changes and renews a weary spirit." What he's talking about is absence of conflict, absence of fear, absolute love. Trees grow, and in their growth, they put down roots, they put up their branches, they are a part of all of nature, just like we are. And so we feel that affinity with everything being as it should be, everything being in right and perfect order. Mahatma Gandhi said, "To forget how to dig the earth and to tend the soil is to forget ourselves." We are part of all that is. We are the dirt that the scientists tried to pawn off as their own. It didn't belong to them. It was a part of them. It was a part of who they are. Dirt has within it all of life expressing, just like we do. And that same dirt grows all kinds of things. It grows the grass, it grows the trees, it erodes when there's water coming down and there's no plant to anchor it. There's no outward expression of life to anchor the dirt where it is. And so with erosion, it moves to someplace else where it can be useful. Where it can be useful. Walt Whitman said, "I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars." What did he mean? He meant that a blade of grass, or as he called it, a leaf of grass, has within it all of the life, all of the intelligence, all of the wisdom, the wholeness, the oneness that are in stars. It's that same God essence that is within everything. And everything acts in accordance with the God essence, every natural thing. We humans, God bless us all, like to come up with great ideas. And sometimes these great ideas are really great. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're not. I was thinking about how we become indoctrinated in our life and what we believe. And I looked up Ernest Holmes' version of the creation story in the Science of Mind textbook. Did you know he has a creation story in here? It's really cool. It's nice. It's on page 65. So here we go. The creation of the universe according to the understanding of Ernest Holmes. God made the mechanical universe, the plant and animal life, but this did not satisfy him, for he wished to create a being who could respond to and understand him. So he created a being who had real life within himself. He could do this only by imparting his own nature to this being whom he called man. He must make him in his own image and likeness. He must make him in his own image and likeness. Man must be created out of the stuff of eternity if he is to have real being. Humanity must partake of the nature of the divinity if it is to have real life. So God made man from the essence of himself and clothed his subtle essence with definite form. And God said within himself something after this fashion, quote, "If I wish to have a man who is a real being, I must give him self-choice. He must be spontaneous, not automatic. He must have dominion over everything that is of lesser intelligence than himself. I will let him name everything that I have created, and he shall have all things to enjoy, for his life must be full and complete if he is to express my nature." So God gave man dominion over all earthly things. Man was not given the power to govern the universe, but he was given the power to have dominion. And God, viewing all that he created, saw that it was good, very good. How could it be otherwise, since he had created it? How could God, being goodness, see other than God? The Creator is greater than the creation. Always. Always. Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote, "Love all God's creation, both the whole and every grain of sand. Love every leaf, every ray of light. Love the animals. Love the plants. Love each separate thing. If thou love each thing, thou wilt perceive the mystery of God in all. And when once thou perceive this, thou wilt thenceforward grow every day to a fuller understanding of it, until thou come at last to love the whole world with a love that will then be all-embracing and universal." How very well said, how very well written, how very well translated, because I'm sure the original was not in English. I wrote something before that I'm going to share with you now, and I call it the lemming experience. Everybody knows about lemmings, right? One lemming falls off a cliff, all the other lemmings go jumping off a cliff. Herd mentality. Parents find themselves in some pretty interesting conversations when raising their children, and I like to refer to these as teachable moments. Sometimes the lessons are about love, being a part of a family, kindness, sharing. So many of the things that children learn and adopt as their own behavior in the first 5 years of their life is because they are mimicking the behavior and the language of those who are in authority and their peers. I mean, let's face it, me and my brother are little kids. If my brother cries and gets a cookie, I'm going to look at that and go, aha, I want a cookie. What am I going to do? Am I going to bother to sit there politely and say, Mom, may I please have a cookie? When I can see just, you know, one little cookie worked for my brother. What am I going to do? In his book, The Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz calls this phenomena the domestication of humanity, which, by the way, runs counter to the unique expression of our divine nature. At some point, children will always ask to do or have something based on peer pressure. It goes something like this. Mom, can I go someplace age inappropriate, do something dangerous, go to an unchaperoned event, stay out past my curfew? Of course, the kids don't say this. They say, can I go to Johnny's? Can I go to the movies with Tommy? Well, what's playing? I don't know. Well, let's find out. Oh-ho! R-rated. No, perhaps not, six-year-old child. So the mom, in response to whatever this question is, or the dad, whatever parent, always says no. The child, of course, comes back with, everyone else does it. You know where this is headed, right? The mom, the parent, will usually say something like, if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you follow? And that should lead to a discussion of personal choices and the importance of being true to yourself rather than being a mindless follower to be acceptable in the eyes of others. Just for the record, everybody is always acceptable. Not everybody has to like the behavior of everybody else, but nobody has the authority to say, you being you is unacceptable. We don't have a choice in your acceptability because you're already a divine spiritual being. We might as well say, God, you're unacceptable. Nature, you're unacceptable. I remember my mom asking me if all my friends jumped off a cliff, would I follow them? And I just stood right there and looked at her and I said, we don't have any cliffs around here. Now, the lighter side of science had a post that might inject a little bit of humor into the jumping off a cliff question. You can just sing a little song for your child. Birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's go hurtling into a sliding glass door and die. Are we going to believe and behave according to humanity's conditional nature? Are we? Or are we going to look beyond the outer appearance of separation to recognize and realize that we are all one stuff? We are all one, one essence, one life, one source, one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. What are we going to do? on page 525 in the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest wrote, "One with perfect action." He wrote, man is made out of and from life. As an effect must partake of the nature of its cause, so man must participate of the divine nature. Okay, let me back up a little. This is a quote from Ernest Holmes, and it's in the Science of Mind textbook, page 107, second paragraph. Man is made out of and from life. As an effect must partake of the nature of its cause, so man must partake of the divine nature from which he springs. We did not create our nature. We cannot change its inherent reality. We are what we are, and we use this nature for better or worse. On page 525, Ernest wrote a meditation for self-help called One with Perfect Action. This is what we need to remember about ourselves, that we are one. That, as Emerson told us, everything in nature contains all the power of nature. Everything is made of one hidden stuff. So here we are, one with perfect action. I am one with perfect action. Everything that I do, say, or think is quickened into action through this right understanding and this correct knowing. The harmonious action of the great whole operates through me now and at all times. I am carried along by this right action and am compelled to do the right thing at the right time. There is nothing in me that can hinder this action from flowing through me. The action of God is the only action. So, what is nature? Nature is God. What is God? God is everything, including nature. And all the laws of nature are a part of the action of God, the perfect action of God. What are you? You are one with God. God is the stuff you are made of. So I thank you for your time, for your attention, and for the awareness that you are your own dirt, and so it is.